Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayankaravavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Brief announcement. As I said in the morning, maybe some of you were not here. We'll pass one list after with activities that we'll be executing on the last day. It's a kind of a short internship, so you can experience the activities we run in Gurukul. So we'll be passing towards the end of the class. And also just, we have two water pots, one for the ladies, one for the men. Maybe you're not familiar, so if you want some water, just walk back. The water pots, they will be there. Thank you.
Okay, so then this topic today is the establishing curriculum for Vedic education. So the basic principle is that Krishna then, he comes to perform human pastimes. So that means he comes to do what humans would do. Because he sets the example. The 20th quality of Krishna is that he follows the scriptural rules. He doesn't not follow them because he's God. The point is because he's God, he follows them. Right? So basically the scriptural rules are those rules that God likes to do. In other words, what is God's lifestyle is what the scriptures give. So why is that? Because the whole point is of the Vedic culture is to go back to Godhead. So going back to Godhead means going back and taking part in the Lord's pastimes. Taking part in the Lord's pastimes means doing things that the Lord likes to do. Right? Therefore, one has to be comfortable with that lifestyle. That's why the principles of what we do in our lifestyle here are the same as what's in the spiritual world. They're not different. Right? Just like, let's take for example, then in the Brahma Samhita, it mentions that Mother Jashoda, then, well, it mentions anyone, but we'll give her example. She has the mood of parental rasa towards Krishna. Right? Then that will manifest a particular form and activities that go along to express that primary mood, right? Because there's a mood. And so that's expressed through that form, right? So the primary is that love for Krishna, that attraction to Krishna. The secondary will be the expression of that. So to do that, you need a form. That form can do activities. Those activities can express the affection, right? So that means the form and activities go with that mood. Does that make sense? So that's because they have that attraction for Krishna, that affection for Krishna. So it works that way. But when you're working with in the material world, then the difficulty is we don't have that, right? Our mood is that we're the supreme controller and enjoyer. And since that hasn't worked out with for us in, you know, how you say, thousands of millions of lifetimes, then we finally come to the conclusion, maybe something's wrong here. Why? Why aren't I happy? Why aren't I enjoying? Why isn't everything go perfectly? Right? Then we take up the spiritual life and then we start to practice. Right? So now, in that practice, we're going to do the same thing, but instead of starting with prema and then introducing the forms and activities, why are we here? Because of the secondary, not the primary. Right? The living entity comes to the material world not because they're interested in the primary, which is Krishna. They're interested in the secondary, which is all the forms and activities that generate results that cause happiness or enjoyment. So we like the enjoyment part. The enjoyment part means then we have to get results. Results means then you have to have activities to do that. Right? And a form and knowledge and an attitude. Then you can perform that, right? So we're looking at this second half. So therefore, it's the same principles in the spiritual world, just as reversed. It means you're trying to get to the primary, which means that it's about Krishna's pleasure. But since we don't have that love for Krishna, therefore we don't have the spiritual form to express that to Krishna. So what do? We start with the form that we have here, the form and mentality, therefore where we would fit in the cultural system or in the Varnashram system. Then from that, we just use that to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So we're doing the same thing they do in the spiritual world. We just have to reverse it a bit. Because we don't have the love, so we start with the external. And we do that for Krishna. That will then purify us. And by Krishna being pleased by that endeavor, then he reveals himself and we become attracted. We develop that love. You understand? So that means then the scriptural activities that are given to us here, those are the activities there. Just here we do it because it's scripture. That's why it's called Vaidhi Bhakti. There they do it out of spontaneity. That's the best way to serve Krishna in that rasa. Does that make sense? So in other words, what we do here that we're given as sadhana is the exact same thing they do there. Just here it has to be structured and regulated, while there it's a natural, spontaneous position. Right? Not that there's not some structure there. Like that, you know, the sun comes up in the morning, gets light. They don't need sun in the spiritual world. It's self-effulgent. But for the pastimes, then there's night. So there'll be a time when the sun comes up, there'll be a time when it goes down, there'll be a time when the moon comes out. Does that make sense? You know, city life is like cities, forest is like forest. So all the things that we find here are the same as there. Just the difference is it's not as wonderful as there. It has all the same things, but you can't get the same experience because here we're just getting the external. The primary is this pleasing Krishna. So what we have to do is taking the Varnashram system, taking the Vedic system, we add Krishna consciousness. But the form of it, that's the same form as there. That's why it's recommended. People can say, no, but you can do anything, and that you can. But why would you want to do something that's just anything when you could be using the system used by God in the spiritual world? So that's the important thing. And that's what the acharyas have given us, so that's what we're going to use. We're not going to go by the modern speculative things. Well, maybe it's this, and maybe it's that, and maybe it's not. Well, you understand? Because we have to remember is that there's a philosophy called Syadvad. Syad means maybe this, maybe that. It's Jainism. In other words, it's a form of atheism. So it's based on speculation. So, you say, well, maybe there's God, maybe there's not. Maybe this is eternal, maybe it's not. Maybe this is temporary, maybe it's not. You understand? So mundane academics works on this principle of maybe. So why we should use an atheistic system when we've been given a purely theistic system by the acharyas? They're from there. They say this is what you do. This is what they do there. We'll take their opinion, a 1,000,000% over anybody else. And if you do that, that's called faith. And if it's, well, I don't know, that's called lack of faith. It's not called, oh, I'm so intelligent. I'm discerning. I'm this and that. Yes, you're doing all that. Plus, you have lack faith. You understand? It has to be very, very clear is that you have the neophyte, the Madhyama and Uttama, right? As generally, as we go through the devotional process. But that's based on someone who has faith. Right? There's also another category where you say that there's Kamal Shraddha, there's intermediate Shraddha, and then there's Uttama Shraddha. Right? So that means when there's Kamal Shraddha, you're not quite so sure about that. Madhyama Shraddha, then you take up the process. Uttama Shraddha, that means then that starts with what we would call by the Kanista Adhikari Madhyama, that which starts with Madhya. So when you're on the platform of Nishta, that means you're fixed in devotional service. Why? Because your faith is fixed. Then that Uttama gets more perfect, most perfect, right? So it'll be perfect in the Madhyama stage, more perfect in the Bhava stage, and most perfect on the stage of Prema. Understand? Because we have to understand pure devotional service is one thing. It just has its levels. Right? So when we have this understanding that what Krishna does, that we follow in the footsteps. In other words, we wouldn't know what do we do, what do we not do, right? Because you see, some people think, well, Rasa dance looks good, Krishna did it. But the acharyas say, no, that we don't do. But that he gets trained by a teacher. That he's, they say, that's what you should do. Does that make sense? So, in other words, scripture gives all the rules, and then the acharyas then give us from all those rules what we should be following. Because it depends, one, do you want to go back to Godhead? That's there, and then within going back to Godhead, is it going to be sweetness, or is it going to be majesty? Majesty means Vaikuntha, sweetness means Braj. So, basically, for going to the spiritual world, it's all the same thing, it's just a matter of the flavor. So then the Braj flavor, then that is there, so it has the sweetness, but it doesn't mean that all the technical points aren't there. It's just done in a softer form. Just as technical, but in a much more pleasant form. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have a formal dinner or an informal dinner. It doesn't mean that the food on an informal dinner is not as nice as the formal dinner. Right? It could be the same food. It's just the mood that's there when you eat it. Right? So, what we're, you know, then establishing is the point that Krishna goes to Gurukul. What he studies, this is human education. This is what one should learn. It's complete. And we see that Prabhupada, when he discusses it, he discusses all these areas. Right? So then you see that there's four divisions to what they study, what they learn, to the curriculum. So there's going to be the ashram aspect, or the aspect where they're trained in the character. Right? That being the most important. Those who have developed in that up to a workable stage, then they learn the academic. The academic means, like we discussed yesterday, the study of the 14 books. Then, after the study of the 14 books, that's done, then you have the general knowledge of the whole Vedic curriculum. Then areas that are important to you according to your nature, according to your interest, then you focus on them, you study them more deeply. Because that's what you're going to use as a specific foundation. And other things will all be as a backup. Right? Then, once that's understood, so you have everything down, then you can learn all the various arts and sciences according to what works for you. Someone's interested in music, someone's interested in other things. All these things can be added on to that. But the point is those are only valuable once you understand the Vedic position of the science. Right? That there's the culture, there's the philosophy that goes with that culture, then there's the knowledge that goes with that philosophy and culture, then there's the specifics of that, then you can have the arts. Because if you don't understand the connection, it's so easy to get distracted by the arts. Right? Artists are famous for being distracted. You know, even amongst themselves, artists goof amongst themselves about them. I don't know if you heard the term about artists, that the guy's very artistic, so he's called artsy fartsy? Anyone heard that? That's a term used by the artists, not by other people. Otherwise, what would they know? You understand? So they know how, you know, they get so distracted by the arts and can't function and So that's why then it's done in this order. Means if you're an artist and just want to go for the art, you can go for it first, but then you'll end up more like that. You start with the other end and come down, it'll be more balanced, more cultured and everything like that. Like in India, you see is that, like even the classical musicians, they're artsy, but they have the culture and everything because the character has to be learned. They're playing their musical instruments or singing when we do Mangal Arti. They're up, they took their bath, they're doing that. So when we're doing Mangal Arti for the spiritual, they're playing the musical instrument for the material. And if you're not up at that time, you can't stay in the ashram. Okay. I think it was Aladdin Khan. He's the guru of, you've heard Ravi Shankar. Right? No?
Yes.
Wow.
Aladdin Khan.
Huh?
Aladdin Khan.
Yes. So then, then one of the main musicians that was there, who's actually better than Ravi Shankar, but people don't know about him so much. So he had been staying up really late practicing. Normally they go to bed at a certain time, but he was playing something. He just kept going with it, and you know, like that. And then at 5 in the morning, he wasn't playing. And Aladdin, then he saw this. And he just went down to the train station, bought him a ticket back to Calcutta, and came. And when he got up and all that, he handed him the ticket. Said, you can go now. Like that. And then he explained what he had been doing and all this and that. And then he showed him what work he did. Then he said, okay, then it's okay. But otherwise, you're up at 5. You know what I'm saying? So they run like a gurukul, like that. But it's not about spiritual, it's just purely mundane. But the point is they learn the same system, and that's how they become what they are. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that it has to start with the culture. Because that's the whole thing, is that a gentleman is cultured. Then, within that being cultured, then he may be a more of an intellectual, an administrator, a business or business person, or he may be an artist. But the point is the culture is the common thing amongst humans. So it doesn't matter what they are. They're a Brahmin, they're a Shudra. The culture will be the same. Does that make sense? How many times they take a bath, how much puja they do, that may be different. But the culture, interacting with them, that will be the same. Someone's rich, someone's poor, it will be the same. Paraphernalia may be more fancy or more simple, but the culture will be the same. You're greeted at somebody's house, you know, that looks like the Goshala over there, and you'll get the same treatment as if you went to the rich man's house. The difference is here you'll be sitting on a little grass mat, there you may be sitting on something very fancy, you understand? But the culture will be the same. That's the human, that's the basis of the human life. Without that, just having the knowledge. Like yesterday after the class, the one gentleman asked me, okay, all this is nice, but you know, we're in the modern age and all that where, you know, people don't value the culture and all that. And so you have to have a degree to make it in the world, right? They've already made the statement. Well, who said you have to have a degree? And most people that have degrees, I don't know, it depends upon where you're from, but at least in America, you have a degree in one thing, your job's in something else. Practically guaranteed. Unless you're in IT, then maybe it'll be there. Anything else? If you got a BA in anything, you are doing something else. Like that. There is no job for somebody who has a BA, unless it's, you know, a journalism or that, and you're good at it, and so then you're working with a magazine or something like that. But basically speaking, most of the time, what degree you have, you are doing something else. So this whole fallacy, you have to have this piece of paper, that's just people like to think that because they got a piece of paper. They don't want to be an idiot that I worked so hard to, and now I got this job. The other guy, you know, came out of high school and got the same job. You feel bad. You know, you want to feel superior. I put in that much time, that much money and all that, and I got student loans that are going to be paying off until I'm 50 years old. And so I want to feel good about myself. You understand? So the whole point is that people still, if it comes push to shove, how many people try out for that job? That was interesting. Try out. Audition. No, not audition. What do they do? No. They go down and you get talk to you?
Interview.
Interview. Yeah. We were talking about art, so he used the art terms. You go for an interview or like this. And so there'll be so many guys showing up, especially in India. Like in America, you hear about 100 people show up. In India, 1,000 people will show up. So what's the difference? They all have the same paper. They all look the same. They all went to the same school. Like that. So what's the difference? The difference is in the character. So the one with more character, the one with, that is able to use his intelligence with the character, he's the one you hire. So even if you say, yes, okay, you need the degree, but the point is without the character, what's the point of the degree? And as we'll get to, is that about those who have character, they learn. People who don't have character do not learn. Say what you like, that's the reality. So, therefore, the ashram is the first thing. The character is strong, then they can study. Means in my working with education and all that for, you know, last so many years, I have not seen one child with good character that wasn't good at his studies. And I have not seen one child that has bad character that's any good at their studies. Even they're super intelligent. And we've had intelligent kids. You know what I'm saying? So we've had them. And we've had kids that we had one kid. He was such a nice boy. And he had such enthusiasm to learn. And we told the teacher, the English teacher, who was elderly Indian gentleman, very experienced, used to run his own school, 300 kids like this and that. He used to work as an IFS officer. I don't know if you know, in India, these officers, so they take this Indian Administrative Service test. 100,000, I think, per year can take the test. The top, I forget what it is, 2% or something like that, those guys go into IFS, means Indian Foreign Services. They're the ones that represent the government. They go overseas, do all that kind of stuff. So in other words, they're the most intelligent of all these guys. Then the next major chunk, that's the IAS officers. They become the ones who? Administrative. They're all the secretaries and the government and everything like that. Then the next down from that, who have more of more practical. They have a good academic, but it's more practical. They become the IPS. Right, they become the police officers, the top police, the DM, all those things. So this was an IFS officer. He actually served when Nehru was the prime minister. He used to go in, talk to him, and all that. He represented India on so many things. So after doing that, he retired from that. He ran his own school in Calcutta, English medium. Ran it himself, wasn't money not coming from anywhere. So he was good. He knew what he was doing. And so he wanted to teach this kid because he was so good in character. And we told him the guy doesn't have any brain. I mean, like, no brain. I mean, like, zero. We're not talking, oh, but that's not nice and all that. We're talking that he learns A, he's got it. He learns B, he's got it. He learns C, he's got it. He learns D, he forgets A. And if he learns E, he forgets B. In other words, he has a three-letter brain. Right? And so then, but the teacher thought, okay, no, we can do it like that. After 2 years, he came to me and says, no, he can't learn. But I've never seen a more sincere student than that kid. Because he had such a good service attitude, such a nice personality like that. So that's my point, is it doesn't matter. We had another kid also, same like that, very nice, had a little bit more capacity. When he started to learn Mridanga, he couldn't learn Te, Re, Ke, Ta. It was too much for him to remember. So he had to learn 1, 2, 3, 4. And it was like that for weeks and weeks and weeks till finally he could do. He became a very good Mridanga player. But he didn't have that kind of academic intelligence. He takes it as far as he can. He'd still be broken English, this and that. But if you really want to know, the guy lives in America, owns a house there. I don't mean apartment. I mean house. House, garage, front lawn, side lawns, backyard, that kind of house. You ever heard of those? Like that. Parts of America, they're pretty common. Like that. And he owns a house in Nepal where he's from, right next to the temple. And a full house with land. And because it wasn't enough, he decided he wanted to do more and, the families and this and that. He bought the next piece of land next to that. And he bought that back in the, 90s for 20 lakhs. Right? So that was a lot of money back then. You understand? And this is the guy who had the character, but didn't have much academic ability. So you see that, just student after student. They go through the school, they don't come out with, modern degrees, They want to do university degrees. They get into university. They take them because they see the character. They see their ability and intelligence. Right? Kids go out of here in a lower level. The parents are going to the school, like in Australia. Oh, you know, he's been in Gurukul. So, you know, even though he should be at, you know, seventh grade, you know, I think he'll probably be around fifth grade and this and that. So I don't know what to do. The principal says, well, bring him in. Let me talk to the kid. Let me see. They bring him in. You know, the parents there said, no, you can't be here. We want to talk to them alone. Right? Because otherwise, you ask the kid a question, parent answers, right? Because, you know, you want to make sure that they say the right thing. So, whatever. Talk to them alone. Now, parents out there freaking out. What's going to happen? You know, expecting they'll come out and say, no, I can't do anything with this guy. He's too far back. They come out and says, no, he's up to his standard. In fact, he's probably better. And if there is anything, I'll personally teach him. Because they saw the character and the maturity that was there from the Gurukul training. That they want to work with that. We have to understand successful people in the world, intelligent people, educated people, want to work with people that have character and can use it in their life. People with degrees in a suit are a dime a dozen. Literally. I mean literally. That is so common. Now if they're in a, you know, Versace suit, okay, now that's not as common. But, you know, off the rack, yeah, pretty common. Does that make sense? So, therefore then, if that's strong, you don't have to, everything else will follow. That's the whole point. Well, how do we know they'll do it? It has their character. Right? Therefore, the more the parent is seeing to the character, and that, then the better it is they start. They start earlier, it starts to work better. They get a head start. So the head start is not that at 1.5 they can already read and write like they do in Japan. I think they start them at 3 months or something like that, or 6 months. It's some crazy thing. And then they found that, yeah, by the time they're 8, then they have a nervous breakdown because they weren't supposed to start then. That's why in the Vedic, you don't start all this stuff before. You know, you can do a little bit of just, you know, learning letters, learning numbers, but nothing serious. You know how much they can. It's not, it's like that. So they learned that. Then they start the serious education when they're 5 or 6. So if you want to know how to get ahead, the kid should get ahead, it's character. Not anything else. Means don't worry. Professionals will tell you all kinds of stuff. But unfortunately, every 6 months those professionals have something different to say. Well, the sages, they've said the same thing for the last millions of years. So, you know, you can make your choice. Like that. But remember, you just have one shot. Like that. So make the right choice. So then, from that, then we see we get into the others. Because then they can study from that, then they can go deeper into it for the personalized studies. And then from that, then they can learn whatever arts and all that along with it, and it won't affect their mentality. Does that make sense? Okay. Then, okay. So then the idea is that they'll go through these things, they'll learn these things, but the whole idea of the character, the most important, is the spiritual understanding. Coming to take up spiritual life. Like I think there was a discussion once that Prabhupada was saying about, you know, the children are, you know, when the children become devotees and all that, then the parents get the credit for, you know, a devotee. You know, it's like preaching. Like that. So then somebody thought, oh, great, you know, so I've had my child, so then I get the benefit of that. Prabhupada said, no. He says, when they turn 16, and it's 16 because they're adult at that age, they're committed to being a devotee, then you get the credit. Not before that. So the whole idea is that all this character training, that is necessary, that they learn so many things. But the most important is that their ability to surrender to the spiritual master, surrender to the spiritual process, take up the devotional process, go back to Godhead. Because that's the real point of being a parent. Right? Means everybody's trying to go back to Godhead, but there's some attachment, so therefore one wants to be involved in the process of raising the children up to Krishna consciousness and supporting them like that. So that's fine, because it's Krishna's process. He'll take care of himself, and if we want to take part, we can do it. right? There's hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis. They're all serving Krishna. And if we want to take part, we can. It's not that if we don't make the offering, Krishna doesn't eat. No, he's going to eat anyway. It's just whether we want to get any credit for taking part in the process. You understand? Just we won't see the eating going on. But it will go on. You think the gopis are going to let Krishna go hungry because we didn't show up? Right? Does that make sense? So, the same way as these souls will be brought up in Krishna consciousness. Just if we want to take part, then we can take part. But the point is this, we're making Krishna consciousness, but at the same time as we're getting the benefit of the attachments to the family life and the interactions and all the things that go along with it. And that's not a problem, as long as one understands that's secondary. Primary is becoming God conscious. Right? We're engaging our conditioning. Right? So then this is where it comes in, is you have the general point, right? That we're servants of Krishna, so the ashram things. Then this is the Vedic knowledge, we learned that. Then we see the third aspect is that, well, what is the specific nature of the living entity? By what body you have, what mind you have, intelligence you have. And then that we engage, and that's the third part. But the point is you can't use the Varnashram unless you have the character. Because Varnashram is designed, at least devotionally, to function in goodness. Because passion and ignorance, it may be that the particular occupation may be controlled by some modes, but it doesn't mean we have to be controlled by those modes. Right? I take a potato, I cut it up into pieces. I'm destroying the form that it has. What mode is doing that? The mode of ignorance, because it's destroying the form. But I'm creating a new form for other things. That's passion. So passion and ignorance are going on. Right? But why I'm using a potato? Because the Shastra says you use vegetables, so that's goodness. You understand? But what mode are we supposed to be under? Pure goodness. Right? So the modes do their work. That's just how the place functions. We don't have to be under those modes. So to be functioning in any of the varnas or ashrams, they have their modes that are functioning. But it doesn't mean we're controlled by them, because we're devotees. Karmis, yes. Devotees, no. It means you can be if you want, but you know the options there, you don't have to be. So then it's just a matter of whatever it is, we use it in Krishna's service. And it doesn't matter. Is the grater, the potato peeler, the knife, or the can opener? Which one's the most prestigious? Right? Does it matter? Why not? Because you're thinking about cooking. So, if you have a can and you need to open it, which one should it be you using? Right? You have a potato, you want to get the skin off. You want to take the potato, cut it up into pieces? Or you want the potato to be in long, thin little strips because you're going to make tomorrow's a codicil? Right? Tomorrow is a codicil. You understand? So, therefore, because you're looking at it from cooking, it means which one is suitable for the particular work, that's the one you use. So it's not a matter of prestige. So when you're looking at it as Daiva Varnashram, it's service to Krishna, there is no prestige. It's just a matter of which is the best position and who has the best qualifications for doing a particular service for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why for the Vaishnavas, it doesn't matter which position you're in. So it's only an influence of the materialistic and especially the modern that we're worried about the particular position we're in. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. So, okay, means we know Brahman is better than the Kshatriya, than the Vaishya. The Brahmins are great, they're the top, they're the this, the that, but they don't have any control, they don't have any money. So technically, who wants to be a Brahmin? Now the Kshatriyas, they got all this and that, but they don't have the money. The Vaishyas have the money. So if you have money, you can control the other ones like that. So then you want that, but then the position of the Vaishya is not as good. So therefore, and definitely we don't want to be a Shudra, because they're just on the bottom, right? And so therefore, then what are we going to do? Because it's very obvious what's important to us, because it wasn't the Brahminical, like that. And if we're talking like this, it's not about the Kshatriya or Vaishya, because if we had money, we wouldn't talk about it. If we had a position and authority, we wouldn't be talking about it. So where does that place us? right? We won't push it any farther. And so, therefore, then we say, oh, well, you know, we're Vaishnavas, we don't care about the rules, you know, we're transcendental, we just do whatever, we just serve Krishna, right? So we don't need the Varnashram. You understand? Because anybody who's practical and real and successful in the world, you have to make these divisions. And to that degree, the divisions are there. To that degree, that situation or society or institution is functioning nicely. And people with the qualifications in a particular area do that, therefore then you have. So that's the fun part, is Vedically, oh no, it's everybody's the same. And modern on the academics, no, everybody's different according to their degree. You have to have the degree. Does that make any sense? No. So that's the problem. So we're not using intelligence here. It's just attachment. We grew up in a modern society, modern educational system, we can relate to that, so therefore that's the real thing. Well, then when it comes to the Vedic, I don't know it, it's different, and I may end up in a position that's not so great. Because I can be a professional, and the professionals are the top of the pile, right? At least amongst the common people. But for businessmen, they hire professionals, means they're lower than them. Common people, you put them right up there. But actually, they're below the people who do run things. You hire professionals to come into a specific thing and go away. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that we don't want to socially be in a less position. But the Vedic system is, it doesn't matter what system, where you are. It doesn't matter whatever's the background. You're able to come up to the position of, national television. Channel 18. But in Hindi. So, yeah, sorry. So, No, it's all right. I'm just so that everybody knows who the competition is. So, yes. So the whole idea is the discipline is so that we are structured and we develop the ability to function within sadhana bhakti. Because of all the things we're doing, the sadhana is the most important. Right? Because that's then our service to Krishna. Occupations are simply so that we have the money and facility to render sadhana. Right? We're situate ourselves, whatever ashram works for us, so that we can be engaged in sadhana. Right? Some need a house, some don't. Whatever it is that works for you, that's then how you situate yourself. But the goal of it is devotional service. So therefore, if there's no discipline, how do you learn? If there's no discipline, how do you apply that to devotional service? As Indradumna Maharaj was saying the other day, that the word disciple comes from the, I'm not sure, Greek or Latin, means discipline. Like that. It comes from the Latin, it basically came from the Greek. Like that. And we know it came from the Greek, probably came from the Sanskrit, just in the walk across the desert, it kind of maybe changed a few letters. Okay. So then, we see as Vaidhi Bhakti means that it has this discipline. So that's what's being engaged. So for us, what Rupa Goswami gives, that's the most important, because that's what we're going to apply. So if you have the character that you can study and follow the activities of the ashram, you can apply devotional service. And if you can be successful in these other, you can be successful in this. Therefore, that's the whole point. Is we're trying to be successful in devotional service. Now, devotional service is independent. But the point is you're engaging the body, mind, and words in the Lord's service. So the more you're able to be in control of that, that you can use that in a way that's progressive, then it's easier to engage in devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So these aspects that we have, the character training, the responsibilities that we have, the duties, the obligations, the morality that's there, These are only, as we said in the beginning, in support of devotional service. Krishna comes to do his particular activities. Now it's about the love exchange between Krishna and the devotees. That's the real thing. That's the primary. Secondary is you're going to have a particular form and characteristics that you're going to engage. Particular qualities. Right? Those are secondary. Right? But on the spiritual platform, you don't need to make any difference, but analytically, then we can make this difference so that we understand how it works, so we understand how to apply it here. There, you don't have to make a distinction. Right? In the spiritual world, they don't have to sit around going, we're not the body. Right? Because technically, they are the body. The spiritual body is the expansion of the soul. They are the body. Krishna is his body. We're not the body because we're jivas in the material world. That makes sense. But over there, they don't have to worry about that one. So, the morality then is its connection to Krishna. Morality on its own is not important. Like morality on its own is as important as a pile of potatoes are on their own. Right? Now, of course, tomorrow being Ekadasi, those pile of potatoes will have more importance. But what's the importance of the potatoes? Their ability to be used in Krishna's service. So morality, it only has a value when it's connected to Krishna. If it's not connected to Krishna, it doesn't have a value on its own. Nowadays, you'll hear individuals, they'll talk about, no, but it's not fair, or it's not, you know, what about someone's obligation, or their rights, or what about equality? Where have we mentioned, what about Krishna? They'll say, of course it's for Krishna. Explain. Acharyas give the science how all this is connected. Explain how it's connected. There's a good chance it's not. Now, we're not talking devotees, you know, from early days who are with Prabhupada, personally trained by him from the 60s, and at least like this. We're not talking them that just Prabhupada said, we're doing it. That's just faith. They're running on that. So whatever it is, however simple it is, that's what they did then. They do it now, it'll work. But we're talking about, oh no, but what about, you know, like, no. Their faith is in the modern, it's not in the Shastra. That's not going to get you anything. Literally. Right? It doesn't get the materialists anything. There's some really nice people out there. Are they advancing in Krishna consciousness? No. They live out in the country, you know, everything's organic, they have all their, you know, places and this and that. You know, they're in Switzerland, they make fabulous chocolate, or they make nice fondue or something, whatever they do out there. But is they a devotee? No. Will they ever become by doing these things? No. Deers, really nice. Cows also, as long as you deal with them. So many things are nice. Guinea pigs are nice. You know, baby donkeys are nice. You know, anything so it's nice, right? Like that. So, but are they becoming devotees? No. So that's not what works. It's that devotional service is the main drive. These qualities are used for devotional service. So the only emphasis on these good qualities is because of their value in devotional service. So the morals, this knowledge, the skills, the character, all this is valuable because of its connection to devotional service. Because the point is at the end of the day, we don't move forward in devotional service, what's the point? We don't surrender to Guru, surrender to Krishna. We don't dedicate our life, then what's the meaning? So that's what human life is for, as we described the Vedic cultures for that. So that's what we want to do. And so then all these preliminaries they have to be able to do. They have to be able to, you know, serve prasad, do the different services that are there, chant, all these things that are necessary in devotional service. And all of that requires character. Serving prasad doesn't mean going around giving everybody a lot on their plate, making your plate and sitting down. That's not serving prasad. Serving prasad is seeing everyone is taken care of, everyone's satisfied. When they're satisfied and all that, then you sit down. That's if there's just you. If there's other servers, then you arrange that all the servers get together and then they all sit down and eat. Does that make sense? So that means that's character, that's training. So it doesn't just happen spontaneously.
like that.
So we can see is that you need more character actually to serve prashad. Right? There's this modern concept, the serving prashad is the exclusive right of the new bhaktas. That's actually a misnomer. That's not culture. They're enthusiastic. They don't know how to do. They don't know. No one's directing them. So then what happens? With time, they just see how everybody else does. Big spoon, everything on the plate in big quantities. Make your plate. Sit down. Hari Bol. Right? So by the modern system, that's what everybody is trained to do. But the actual system is not. So that's why we see these things are important. These prepare you for initiation. They prepare you for devotional service because you have to serve the Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? So it's all about chanting in the association of devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, you know, honoring Prashad, worshipping the deity, worshipping Tulsi, living in the holy place. These are the activities that by doing these, that then prepares one for actual initiation. Does that make sense? So now then going into some more detail, then we're dealing with, so as we mentioned yesterday, the 14 books, we divided them into six different groups that go naturally together. They're mentioned like this in Shastra and that. You can see, so this scriptural mnemonics, that's the mantras, learning of mantras, yes?
We got the brochures late today, so if there's some of you who don't have and wants to have, so you can follow.
Okay. Oh, now they get one and it's not, whoever gets one of these has to clean up in the kaushala, now everybody else is raising their hand. Who didn't have? I don't know, is that a bad thing to not have?
You bring one.
You have a question?
Bhaji, can you take that?
Bhaji.
Can I take permission that you should come? Can I take the clip?
Yes, why not? He's the booklet authority. If he says you get one, you have one. He wants to know if he can get a booklet.
Okay.
I'm not given my name.
I see. He's going to get more.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Because we're not expecting so many booklets.
Yeah, so it's good. So then you have the mantras, you have the Sanskrit, you have the deity worship, you have the mathematics and physical sciences, you have the philosophy and logic, and you have the civics and social sciences. So in the memorization of the shlokas, the mantras, then you have basically two kinds of mantras. You have the Vedic Sanskrit and you have the classical Sanskrit. So the scriptures means the Veda. That means the Veda, the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, and the Upanishads, that's written in Vedic Sanskrit. So Vedic Sanskrit is different from classical. All other books, all the Shruti, what people speak, that's all in classical Sanskrit. So the difference is that the Vedic, then each syllable has a tone. Right? There's three notes in the Rig, Yajur, and Atharva Veda, and for that any syllable could be. And for the Samaveda, there's seven different notes that you could have. So then the point is that in the Vedic, that there's a method of chanting. It's not you can chant it any way you like. I mean, you can do that, but it has its natural method because depending on the tone, it has a meaning. It changes the meaning. You change the tone, it changes the meaning. Like Brahman, depending upon the tonal quality, it either means Brahman, meaning the material world, the Jiva, the Supreme Lord. Right? So it can mean any of these, depending upon how the note, the tone is. So the same word, different tones, and then you also have, as you go together, the grammar, when you stick words together, then it'll also change the tone. Because now, if you take two words and put them together as one word, it slightly changes the flavor of it, so it changes the tone. Right? So all this is already there established within the Vedas are written like that, and then there's the Vedic grammar to explain that. And so we can see is that it's, you know, classical grammar. Beyond that, then you have the Vedic grammar. It means all the rules of classical grammar are there, plus then they have these extra rules that govern the note, the tonal quality. So then to be able to know that, and then to translate according to that, you have to know more. So within our movement, I only know two people that can do that, and that is Srila Prabhupada, because he did the Ishopanishad, and Bhanu Maharaj. Most all everybody else, they know the classical Sanskrit. So dealing with all the Smriti, you know, Bhagavatam, Gita, any other books of the Acharyas, then they know the Sanskrit for that. Right? So then in the Vedic system, then you have to get the syllables exact. That's what it's meaning, that if in a Vedic sacrifice, if one syllable is wrong, then the whole thing's thrown off. That one syllable wrong doesn't just mean the syllable itself. It means the tonal quality of the syllable. Right? Because in, what was this?
Indra-Shatru.
Yeah, Indra-Shatru. In there, I've seen forums where the classical Sanskritists are arguing over that this is not correct. The word's fine. What's wrong with it? Why do they say it's this? Because none of them know Vedic Sanskrit. You know, like that. Bless their souls. So the whole point is that Vedic Sanskrit, then it has a mark that means it's a normal letter, but because of the mark, it's chanted as higher. And it's longer, even though it's a short syllable. So a short syllable becomes long, and a middle note becomes a higher note. And so in that, he chanted one of those wrong. He either chanted one that shouldn't be like that, or one that was supposed to be like that, he didn't. Because not all the Vedas use that. So he would be doing a sacrifice to get somebody, and so therefore he'll be using Atharva Veda. Atharva Veda uses Rig Veda markings, so it has the same pronunciation. So he made a mistake in that one thing. And then he ended up with somebody who Indra is the enemy of, rather than someone who's the enemy of Indra. So now there's someone who'd be killed by Indra rather than they would kill Indra. So it's the opposite result. One syllable. So that's why Prabhupada says, in these previous ages, the Brahmins are so expert that they could chant. And these yajnas go on sometimes for months. You know, Soma Yajna, it's a 9-month yajna. It actually takes a year, because it takes 9 months to set up, and then for 3 months you do like this. So the whole thing is it goes on, and if in that whole thing one syllable is wrong, the whole thing's ruined. That's karmakanda, right? So that's the advantage of chanting. That's what it means, we chant. So therefore, because you're trying to do it, and it's recommended by the acharyas, even if something wrong, it still works. Not that, oh, we chant, we don't need the rules. We don't understand. No, you still follow the rules, but even if there's a discrepancy, it still works. Well, in karmakanda, one little fault, nothing works. It's all ruined. That's the advantage of devotional service, right? That's why we have to know, why we have to have the character. Then we can appreciate, because we're not using this rule to get out of doing things. We're using the rule to be more careful about doing things. We don't care for the rules means we care about the bhakti. It doesn't mean we don't follow the rules, that we're doing it because of the bhakti, not the rule. I'm being clean when I'm cooking because of bhakti. I'm not touching prasad to bhoga because of bhakti. So I'm following the rule, but not because it's the rule. I'm following it because it's pleasing to Krishna. This is the meaning of we chant, we don't care for the rules. And if we think as we chant, we don't care for the rules, means I don't have to follow the rules. The problem is people who say that have very strict rules. Difficulty is they've made up the rules. Or they've accepted other mundane people's rules. Because a conditioned soul can't function without religion. No question. So it's either you follow the eternal religion, or you'll make up your own. It's that easy. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like in the temple during the Arti. Does it say anywhere in Shastra that from behind people you're supposed to sprinkle the water on their head during Arti? No. It was never like that. But during the 80s, then somebody got upset because they kept throwing the water in their face, and then they said, no, throw it from behind. And even though it was that, they made up the rule, But that caught on, because all these things are done by new bhaktas, right? Means, you know, senior devotees, second initiate would never do this stuff, right? Because, you know, anybody can do it, so I'll do something important like Facebook, right? You know, so like that. And so then amongst the new bhaktas, it spread. The whole world does that. And if you tell them that's not how you do it, what do you mean? So we have so many rules we've made up, right? So the whole point is you'll either follow the tradition or you'll make it up. There's no question that you won't have a structure. It's just, do you want to follow a structure given by the acharyas, or do you want one that's, you know, you got off of, you know, whatever it is, the internet. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore then, in chanting these mantras, then there's a set system. The Vedic system is that you don't cram anything. This idea of cramming, you know cramming? It's something that you do 2 weeks before the test. You just sit and you stuff everything in your head. So in English, American English, that's called cramming. You just take something and stuff it in, like taking your sleeping bag and sticking it in that little pouch. That's cramming, right? So you do that, and you pass the test. Unfortunately, a few weeks later, you can't remember anything. So in the Vedic system, you do have in North, like in North, they're not famous for chanting mantras, right? You never hear tapes out of that of Vedic mantras or this or that from the North. From South, you do, because they use the old system. The old system is every day you just go through the words. You just go through it once. And you do that over 10 days. Now, if you're a kid, after 10 days, you actually remember things. If you're an adult, maybe add another zero. But whatever it is, they catch it. Then you just chant it all together 10 times. And you see the kids learn it. They know so many mantras, hundreds of mantras, right? They go out there and chant mantras for this elephant procession. They'll be chanting for, how long are they out nowadays? Hour or more, no?
Hour
and a half. And they're chanting straight mantras. So they have all that, they know that. That's because of this system. And you come back after years, they'll still know it. That's the beauty of the system. So these Vedic systems are so much better. But I have yet to see one adult learn mantras by this method. They come, they sit down, you go through the words, okay, they're cool. Go through the next day, yeah, they do the next day. We just did this. Why are we still doing this? Oh, you know, what's going on? We're going to do this for 10 days. Okay, I'll come back on the 10th day. I've already heard this. Why do I have to sit here and bore myself? I got more important things to do, right? Adults always have more important things to do. Right? So then, they come back on that 10th day. And now the kids can chant all the verses. You did 10 verses. They can chant all 10 of them through 10 times, just straight for how long the class is. And that adult doesn't know one of them. And they'll do that every time. And then after a few weeks, they'll drop out of the class. Guaranteed. I've watched this for the last 30 years. Because of their thing. No, I'm so much more. Kids get it, I can get it even better. I'm an adult. I'm better. But what we forget is the Vedic system is that memorization of all the Vedic knowledge is done by the little kids. Right? Vedic education is divided into three parts. Right? Because in the Vedic education, there's only adult education. There is no such thing as children's education. It doesn't exist. Because there's nothing that you should teach a child that they won't use as an adult. If you teach them stuff that they'll only use as a child, what's the point? So therefore, what they've done is, out of the adult education, those things that children can learn, you teach them that. That which teenagers can learn, you teach them that. And then when they hit adulthood at 16, then you teach them that. So it's the same knowledge, it's just which parts you teach. So everything to memorize is learned basically before you're 12. Right? Or it can go on a few years once you've already started the process. Because before 12, then the memory is like a trap. There's a good chance that you remember things from when you were a kid, but you can't remember what you did yesterday. You understand? Because the point, anything at that time, that lasts your whole life. So whatever it is that should be memorized, whatever fundaments, all these things, that's all done at that age. Then, you know, and they'll learn the basics of how to write, how to read, how to do the basic math and all these things like that. Then, when they hit a little bit older, 11 a little bit it starts, but especially from 13, now it's got to be practical. Right? Before that, they'll learn anything, they don't care what it's for. It's just fun. It's new, it's different, they learn it. But then when they hit 13, then it's got to be something useful. Right? So then it's got to be all the technical stuff. So all the technical things, that you can learn at that time. Because before that, they're not mature enough. Older than that, you don't have the focus. Right? Because if this is external, that you have to be looking at it, you have to deal with it. And then you can teach anything like that. All technical stuff, that they can learn. Then when they hit as an adult, then the whole point is what's the subtleties, the philosophical points, the metaphysical points, the things they didn't have the maturity in their intellect to learn before that. Does that make sense? So in other words, you learn, you memorize, then you learn the technical stuff, then you learn the philosophical points. So the Vedic education is divided like that. So everything that they learn will be something for adults. It's just a matter of time. But unfortunately, because most adults in the modern system, you learn kid stuff, you know, you got the grammar. I don't know if you grant like this. I remember that, you know, because it happened at that time. You know, you have the grammar, and so then you have this funny little stupid train, and on it'll have nouns and verbs and adverbs and adjectives and, you know, whatever it is, whatever else is on the train, the eight parts of speech and all this kind of jazz. But what adult uses a train with all these things on it? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that then there's this big kind of blur between until you graduate from Harvard, and then you know language. But in between, you didn't know anything. So the Vedic wants to avoid that blur in between. So therefore, it's structured as it is. From that, it has a structure. That structure is there from day one all the way to the point when you graduate. From the lowest to the highest, it's the same structure. You simply add more and more detail. The modern is you start only with detail. You take the simplest detail. Then you add a little bit more technical detail, a little more technical detail. And then if you're lucky, if you're a postgraduate, then they'll start to teach you what's the top, what's the concept of it. And that's only if your mentor knows that. And if he doesn't know it, you'll never know it. But the Vedic does it the other way around. You start with that structure. What is a noun? What is a verb? Right? And, you know, that's bringing us into the next thing, the linguistic. Right? So the whole point is you have the verb. Right? It means everything that is there, that you have a name for, it does something. Right? Floor, it does something. Roof, it does something. Pillar, it does something. Almira, it does something. Rug, it does something. You understand? There's no noun that doesn't do something. Right? Either in a dynamic or a static state. So, what does that mean? That the activity that it does something, that's the common point. Then, that it has the form in which it does that, that's the noun. Does it make sense? So in other words, you have something. You know, like you want to move in something. You want the vehicle aspect is there. Then it manifests as a noun, as a car, as a bullock cart, as something. Does this make sense? So in other words, the verb is actually the core point. All nouns are made from verbs. So that means when you have nouns, they're all connected to the verb. So when you're speaking and you use the verb in a sentence, all the nouns are connected to the verb. Does that make sense? So then you have six direct nouns that are connected to the verb. Right? You have the subject, you have the object, the instrumental, then you'll have the place, you'll have the cause, and you'll have possession's another thing. And you have the result, the data. These six, you don't have more, you don't have less. They cover everything. Then, secondary nouns, means all other things are secondary nouns. They simply refine the noun itself and its connection to the verb. Okay? So in this way, in the Vedic, accordingly, you get 24 parts of speech. right? Your main are the seven, the verb and six nouns. And then you have all these other aspects that then they're fine points, then they connect in various ways. And so that's the structure. So from the beginning, that's what you have. And at the end, that's what you have. It doesn't change. Because otherwise, how do you express an adverbal modal? No one can tell you. Go ahead, look in a university book on grammar. They'll define one by saying it's the next thing. You go to that, it's the next thing. You go through it, it'll just run around in a circle. They can't define anything except a noun. You know, person, place, thing. That's what I learned. Now I heard it's person, place, thing, and something else. Anyone can tell me what that something else is? Yeah, some other thing. You know, so the whole point is you have a structure. Everything goes back to that. So that's the Vedic system. You have a structure. Everything's learned off that structure. And then with that structure, then you can understand. Now, why do you use that? I want to express something. How do I express? I express according to what I want to get done. Am I talking about the person who's doing the thing? Am I talking about the person that it's directed towards? Am I talking about the person who is involved in assisting in that process? Am I talking about that result between the two? Does that make sense? Am I talking about the reason for it? I'm talking about the place and time. So depending upon that, therefore you structure what you're saying. Very straightforward. Right? At least in English. Other languages, maybe, yes, they can explain. But in English, they cannot explain what has just been explained here. Not like that. Maybe take them a couple hours. They'll say this, go around in circles. Because Sanskrit is the language, everything else is expanding from there. It's all Prakrit. So then, if you have that understanding, you have a core, you have a structure. Right? So you understand it's communication. Language means communication. So you're trying to communicate. So that's what you're trying to do. Therefore you have grammar, therefore you have vocabulary, therefore you have your poetics and pronunciations and all these different things. Those are all there simply to bring out communication. Does that make sense? That's what you're doing. Now, you've all gone to school. You've all learned language. Have you ever had any of your language teachers tell you that? That's the whole point. So the kid doesn't know what they're studying for the whole 12 years that they study it. But if you're told this is what you're studying, then it makes it clear. Then, okay, how do I say this? How do I say that? Understand? Then when we go into the next things, the mathematics, then mathematics, the whole purpose of math, then you have your main purpose is to be able to establish proper times for doing ritualistic activities. In other words, tomorrow's Ekadasi, how do we know that? Mathematics. Right? So the astronomy is there, and so therefore the mathematics then show how to do that. I mean, are the mechanics that you use. So then in this, the fun part about math, because you have arithmetic, you have algebra, you have geometry, you have trigonometry, calculate like this, it just goes on, right? So, but in the Vedic system, which they get into all that, they have names for that, they use them all. So it's not that they don't have that stuff. But the fun part is it's all addition. That's all there is in the Vedic system is addition. Right? You add two numbers, then you get your result. 2 plus 2, then you get 4. Subtraction is simply doing addition in the reverse. So it's still, in other words, we're taught nowadays subtraction is something else. No, it's just addition reversed. Right? In other words, if you do the equation the other way, okay, 2 plus what equals 2? 0. Okay, 2 minus 2 equals 0. So in other words, it's addition. Just addition, you go this way. Subtraction, you go that way. You understand? So, therefore, is it something new? Is it something different? No. Structure's the same. You go from one step to the next without a problem. It's not this new. Now we come to multiplication. What's multiplication? It's addition in groups. I'm just adding groups. Right? And division is you're doing reverse addition in groups. That you can teach to anybody. And now the whole concept is there, and you can learn it very comfortably. Otherwise, each time it's, you know, each whatever it is, so many months or years, get something new, and they don't show you how it connects to the next. Why? Because it's about, the modern's about speculation and this and new things and all that. That's why they're a teacher. But how many kids in the class are ever going to become teachers? In fact, how many kids in that class like their teachers? Right? Because they never explain this. Okay? So does that make sense there? It's all addition. Now, what's algebra? Now, this is the real freak out. They bring out algebra, now you start freaking out because this is getting crazy. All algebra is that instead of doing one thing at a time, you're doing a few things at a time. That's all it is. And just they have a way to write it down that, you know, A plus B, you know, in brackets over C times, like that. That's all it is. It's just an arithmetic that you have multiple combinations going on at once. Very simple. It's not something new. Otherwise, algebra is this new thing, and it's like, oh my God. You know, you finally figured out the last one. Now we get this. So that's the problem. Then you go into, I can't remember if it was trigonometry next or geometry?
Geometry's
next. So then geometry, then it's also a whole new thing. But all it is that you're using arithmetic to find volumes. So that means it's a multiple thing, but especially volumes. While algebra is you're figuring out what's missing. You know most of the equation, but something's missing. So it's like inference, right? I know there's smoke, you know, but I can't see the fire. So, you know, smoke generally comes from fire, so I can say that there's some kind of fire over there where that kid's head's in the smoke, right? Does that make sense? So that's inference. I can't directly see it, but I can figure it out. So that's all algebra is doing. Well, if you're using the same arithmetic, which is, you know, the addition aspect, to find the volume of something, that's geometry. You know, so whether it's 2D, 3D, you know, you have formulas. And then trigonometry is just finding out the angle. Same mathematics, just it's applied to an angle. You know, and so each one may have its unique words because you're using different. So you have volume, you have sines, cosines, these kind of things. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Makes sense. Book? What? Oh, who means who needs books? Who needs books? Bookus. This one here, he was right in front of you.
We'll get more for tomorrow.
Okay. Does that make sense? So then, the whole mathematical system, no matter where you are, it's on the same function. As you move through, it's just moving from one step to the next. You're just expanding your abilities. But what you're learning is exactly the same. Now for the Vedic, because it's about conclusion, this is fabulous. And again, have you ever heard math explained this way? No, even if you're a math major, you never heard it this way. I remember discussing with somebody, I'm not sure if they were math, I think they were an MA in math. And I explained this to them. They were not happy. Because then this whole thing that they're an MA in math and this whole big monster thing that no one can understand that they know got reduced down to arithmetic. He was really upset. Because it takes all the fun out of the whole speculation. I'm not joking, he was really upset. So that's the whole thing, is that the Vedic sense conclusion is, I take the knowledge, I apply it, and I get the result. But the modern is, no, I play with it, I speculate with it. That's the fun. So now you have a group of people that speculating is the fun. they make the curriculum in the modern educational system. So is it useful? No. If it was useful, would the corporate world have to take over the universities to get students that they can use? No. But because the universities can't produce graduates that they can use in the corporate world in any way. I don't mean that they're you know, how you say, would be corporate. They're just guys at the, you know, at desk somewhere. They can't use them because what they know is useless. They go in, take over the universities. And then all the stuff that's not useful, they get rid of and stuff like that. Plus, they make a good amount of money in the process. Right? Before it was, everybody could go to university. Now, you know, it means you can go to university, but you'll probably come out without any arms or legs at the end to pay for it. Right? So unless you're really smart and you can get a job on Dune, then you won't have anything to do with all that. Okay? Yeah? Mathematics. The priestly is that you have rituals, but the rituals themselves are only an expression of the devotion to Krishna. So just like in language, it does have an exact science. The mantras have an exact science. The mathematics has an exact science. It's not that you don't follow it, but it has this simple... The rule is simply to express the devotion to Krishna. Right? Always remember Krishna. Never forget. That's the whole point. So whatever ritual doing, you have to remember it's for pleasing Krishna. Therefore, if it's for pleasing Krishna, we have to do it with that mentality. We have to know how to please Krishna. Right? And that's the devotion. So, therefore, if we're functioning, focusing on the ritual, we're not thinking of the devotion. So in the beginning, yes, we focus on the ritual, and that is our devotion, that we're learning it for Krishna. But once, with time, you should know the ritual so nicely that now you can focus on the devotion. But that doesn't happen overnight. That takes years. Therefore, then the children from as early age as possible, they learn all the rituals, all the yajnas, all the pujas, all these abhishekas and all that. So that is just second nature. Then they can focus on the devotion in which they do it. Right? Does that make sense? Because then, yes, in 2 to 3 weeks, you can learn technically all the rituals. Right? Maybe more. You want to spend 6 weeks like this. But to be able to use it where it's second nature, that will take you years and years and years. And we're talking about doing it on a daily basis. Many don't do, like festivals, how often do they do? Yajnas, how often do they do? Even the main yajna person in the temple, how many yajnas will they do a year? Right? There's an initiation, one or two a year, like that. I hope that wasn't an exaggeration. Like that, nowadays, you know. But you understand? But here, 2 yajnas a day. So then, how good do you become? Like that. I know one boy, I calculated, by the time he graduated, he himself alone had done 10,000 yajnas. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's the whole thing, is that, then how good are they? Just how easy it is. I don't know, did any of you see the chakra installation and all that? The boys that are doing the yajna. They're doing technical stuff. Other devotees in the movement can't do that. They tend towards the Pancharatric method because it's easier for them. Because they know how to worship the deity of Pancharatra and that. But the Vedic system, the Vedic mantras, they can't understand. So they generally avoid it. But Gopalbhatta Goswami gave this. The Pancharatric is perfectly fine. But what we're saying is Gopalbhatta gave us this, we use this. They can do it. They don't even have to think. They don't need a book. Right? The person who chants has a book just so that they know where they are. But everybody else, they just chant, they have the thing, they just go through it. So it's just, you just say, okay, we're having a yajna. You take half an hour, set up, and you start. You know what I'm saying? It's like a good cook. They just go into the kitchen and start cooking. Someone who's not a good cook, they need 2 days to prepare. Mostly that's mental. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that that's practice and all that. And it's also... In doing the worship, you have the preliminaries, you have the worship itself, you have the conclusion. Everything has this. Right? You want to cook. You have to prepare. Then you do the cooking. Then there's the end part. Serving, you know, the offerings, the cleaning, all these things. You understand? Everything works like that. So therefore, the ritual in serving Krishna, that's where the culture is being expressed in its formalized form. Our culture is simply a form of that. Our lifestyle is pancharatric. It will have the exact same thing. Everything has this. No matter what you want to do. You want to brush your teeth. You got to get the toothbrush, the toothpaste, and all that. You have to get it into your mouth. Okay? Now once it's in your mouth, now the brushing starts. Then you brush your teeth and all that. Then you finish. Now what do you do with the toothbrush? It has to be washed. It has to put back. You have to rinse your mouth. You understand? There's always three parts. And so if that's understood, then how you install something is one way. How you worship something is one way. And the conclusion is one way. Now, depending upon if it's more elaborate or less, then you'll add in more or less. You can worship with 16 items. You can worship with this. You can worship with... You understand? Down to two, and then the Shastra says, or one, bhakti. Does that make sense? So if that's understood, rituals become very easy. Otherwise, oh no, all this technical stuff, right? Achman. It's not that difficult if you know it, but if you write it down, it takes 1.5 pages. Right? I guarantee it'd take a page to write down exactly how you shake someone's hand. Now you say, oh no, you just say no, but you stick out your hand. How far do you stick out your hand? Right? It has to be relaxed. It's generally kind of down, like a 45-degree angle. You don't stick it out straight. You know? You don't stick it behind you. So, right? So therefore, sticking it out like that. How do you put your hand? Your hand is in a in a vertical position. You don't put it sideways in anything like that. Right? It means if you put it this way, then that's something, but then you have to bend your elbow. Right? You bend your elbow and that, then it's going to be, you know, a low five. And if you're going to do up, then you put it like this. But then you have to turn your hand back, right? Because in a handshake, it's straight. The hand and arm are in line, right? But if you're doing a high five, then you actually have to bend the hand back a bit like this. And then the elbow is also slightly bent, depending upon how tall or short the other person is for you. But you have to get it something where the two hands can meet. Okay? Like that, like that. Then when you shake the hand, then you have to grab the hand, but you have to have your fingers close together because you don't want the fingers getting interlaced. Like that. Because generally, in most societies, the interlaced fingers is generally more of an intimate kind of thing, and you don't want to end up getting punched in the face. So therefore, you have your hand, you know, with the fingers together. But the thumb has to be out. You don't want to have the thumb in. That has to be out. So that's at a 90-degree angle from your hand, right? We can see the diagram, right? Right? You understand? And we haven't even started to shake hands yet. So that's the whole point. So the Achman, it's written down. It looks, oh, that's so much. But if you do it, it's 7 seconds. You understand? That's the whole point. So we look, oh, it's so, but it's only this. The preliminaries, the activity itself, and the conclusion. And each one of those things within that has the same form. You have to put everything down, you use it, you have to put it away. Does that make sense? So, does this make sense? So we're going through this idea is that everything has this central structure that everything's based on. Right? So next you have the philosophy and logic. So philosophically you have sambandha, avideya, and prayojana. You have the relationship, you have the process, and you have the result. Everything in philosophy fits into that. There's nothing that doesn't. So if this is understood, this fits in very well. Everything's about Krishna, right? Because in Sambandha, then your Lord Chaitanya gave the Dasa Mool, which means the finer points within this. So the first point is that everything's based on scripture. That's the first point of Sambandha. You have to have faith in scripture. It's from scripture. Second, next three points are about Krishna, right? So Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. Krishna is the source of all energies, and Krishna is rasa. So then you know everything about Krishna in these details, right? So then is the absolute truth. How he's Brahman, Paramahava, Bhagavan. He's creator, maintainer, destroyer. He's the source of everything. He's above everything. He's non-different from everything. All these things. Then he has his energies. Right? So you have internal, external, and jivas, and then beyond that. And then rasa, you have the different rasas, and how he's the vishai, everyone else is the ashrai. He's the master, everyone else is servant. Right? Then you have the jivas. Right? It's the next three. So that means now we have seven. So that means the jiva in general, the jiva as conditioned, and the jiva is liberated. Then you have, how does all this connect together? The Lord, the living entity, all his energies, that's a Chinta Beda Veda Tattva. So those 8 points, that makes up Sambandha Gyan. So everything in our philosophy will fit into this, these categories of there in Sambandha. Abhideya means the process, as given by Rupa Goswami. And Prayojana means love of God. Everything fits into that. So you always have some place to fit the philosophy back to. Does that make sense? And so if you have some other idea than this, the idea is incomplete. This is. Lord Chaitanya says there's only these three things. Says right in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that's what's there. Then when you're dealing with logic, logic basically means that you're presenting things in a logical way, using the intelligence. Otherwise the mind is just because I feel like. So you want to avoid that. If you want to feel about devotional service, but the intelligence should be able to discriminate. So that means you have, what is the point you want to make? So that you have to know what point you want to make. Because if you can't say it in one sentence, you don't know what you want to say. You ever been in a class and somebody gives this 5-minute question that everybody in the class kind of has to help them with because they can't get the words and like that? Yeah, they don't know what they're talking, so what they want to ask. There's a feeling, but it's not quite yet up to the point of intelligence, right? So it tells me you can state what you want, then having stated that, there's a reason why you stated that. Having stated that, given the reason, then you give examples. Right? And then after giving examples, during that phase, the people may have doubts. You answer those doubts, and then you bring it to the fourth stage, which means you show that what you're talking about, what the other person's doubt is already included to what you've already presented. And then the fifth stage is then your conclusion. So Srila Prabhupada, quoting from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, makes the point that in educated circles, then they always use this method. You never just say, because I feel like it, or, you know, because he wants, or that's not enough. You have to give reasons why. You have to be able to explain it. So you see is that if you read Prabhupada's purports, they're all in this, like this. Sometimes it's just a note, or whenever it's a full purport, then you'll see it always has these five in it. Right? So that's the structure in which the philosophy, those three things, the Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, are explained. That's your structure. Everything fits into that. There isn't something else. Does that make sense? In philosophies, then we want to deal with things that aren't complete, then we have the six systems of philosophy. Right? You have just logic itself. They think just by logic or intelligence, I can know everything. You know, scholars, academics, that's what they think. Then you have the atomic theories, the second one, where they think everything comes from atoms. Your modern science thinks like this also. But it's incomplete. They don't see where the Lord is. The third one is, okay, we'll break down those atoms into 24 elements, see the process of creation, how one thing comes from another, how it relates to another. So it's more scientific than just the atomic theory, because you're dealing with metaphysics. Right? Because the atomic theory just deals with the physics. So then, that's more subtle, but, you know, where's the Lord in this? Right? Then you have yoga, which then is more subtle than that, which dealing now includes the mind into it, and then the absorption of the mind and focusing on the Lord. But then the problem comes up, is that not understanding the Lord as a person, and as we're as devotees. Right? Then you have karma, that you perform the action, you get the result. So if I perform the result, I deserve the. I perform the action, I deserve the result. So God's part in all this is just providing the result. Right? So it makes me the center of attention. Right? I'm the controller. I did it. I get the result. I enjoy the result. So it still leaves God out of it. Right? And then Vedanta. Now, if you see it in line with Vaishnav, then yes. Is proper. But if you just see it up to Brahman, and even that concept of Brahman is not actually a full understanding of Brahman, because you think the material world's illusion, you know, that it doesn't exist, it's not here, then that's the Mayavadi, so that's the bogus school. If you understand it's all Brahman, so that tree is here, but it's Brahman, and so I don't make the distinction of it's something for me to be attached to, it's just Brahman. Then, like Sukadeva Goswami, you can run through the forest and not bump into the trees. Why not? Because he can tell what's a tree. He's not saying, oh, it's all illusion, so it's not there. right? Does that make sense? Mayavadis tried that, but they hit the hit on the trees, and so it didn't work out for them. Right? But Sukadev, he is able to go through there, navigate through, not hit the trees. But to him, it's all Brahman. So the tree, Brahman, the naked girl in the pond, Brahman, the path, Brahman. And so you can walk on the path, Brahman, not on the tree, Brahman, and not on the girl and taking a bath, Brahman. So he sticks to the path. You understand? And so it all works out, because it's all Brahman. But they can distinguish. Understand? But then the proper Vaishnava philosophy, you can discriminate then between the jiva, the Lord, and the variety that's there, the material world, and of that it's into Beta Beta Tattva, then gives the highest aspect. Does this make sense? So like that, that's your structures, all philosophy fits into there. That's nice. Then your civics, then as we mentioned, is you have the aspects of you have the primary creation of the Lord. You have the secondary creation of the Lord that's given by Brahma. You have the Prajapatis. You have the Manus. And you have the kings. And then all of what they do. And so all history fits into these five subjects. If you want to refine it more, then you get the subjects of the Bhagavatam, bring in the summum bonum, then how the Lord nourishes the universe rather than just then maintains it. And all these different aspects. But that's all the devotional side. The others, the structure, all Puranas have that. So all literature. Now, if you're doing all five and you're covering all kings and all that, then that's a Purana. If you're covering one king, that's an Itihas. So that's Ramayan, Lord Ramachandra is one king. Or if you, or Mahabharat, Maharaj Yudhishthir is one king. You know, or Prabhupada Lilamrita, one person. In a sense, so it has a structure. Does that make sense? So like that, then this is the knowledge everybody will go through. Everyone has the same understanding, so therefore they all have the same culture. Therefore they can all relate to each other. This is the international element. Well, actually the universal. Then from that, then they go into the specifics of the vocational training, where in all this they want to specialize. And then from there, then whatever arts that are useful to them to, you know, by their own interest in that, because we have to remember is that you have occupation and you have hobbies. Hobbies are arts, right? Occupation, that's what you do to maintain yourself. So the point is, let's say someone knows music. Much of the time people would say, oh, he's an artist. But is that how he makes his money? If he makes his money by music, he's an artist. But if he makes his money at some other occupation and he likes to play music, that's an art for him. That's just culture. And his occupation, that's his vocation. Does that make sense? So just because someone's good at music doesn't make him an artist. You can say he's an artist in the sense that he knows these things, he's cultured, but as an occupation, he's not an artist. Does that make sense? Right? So, okay. Okay, so this next thing, curriculum, part two of curriculum application. So we see here the best way to apply this then in the Vedic system was given, that is ashram training. Because then you can watch these things all day. Because while you're doing the activity, you'll see some stuff. But the same qualities required, let's say, to do a yajna is going to be the character, his focus, how he sits, how he deals with the others, how he deals with the paraphernalia, the attention to details. So you'll see some of that during the yajna, but you'll see that all day. Right? They finish their bath, they dry off, they drop their gumsha on the floor. So if they do that, what's going to happen to the yajna paraphernalia? You understand? They finish with it, they just leave it. No. You take your gumsha, fold it up, put it back. You'll take the spoon or the thing and put it back. You understand? You're doing the activity and whatever you're doing. You do that nicely, that's good. So therefore you can watch. The person sweeps. How does he sweep? Is he sweeping with attention, or is he just kind of doing? So that, if not, he's just kind of throwing the ghee. The direct correlation. So how well the ashram things are working, because that you have all day to watch. Then you can apply that for X amount of time a day for doing a yajna or the puja or in the class or cooking or... Understand? So you can see it all the time. Just how they walk through the garden, you can tell. Like that. I don't know if any of you have had to, they talked about the, you have the 3 second, the 3 minute, the three day, the 3 week. You heard of that? 3 seconds, all you have to do is watch them move. You can already tell. Right? 3 minutes, you just talk to the kid. You can tell. So you already have an idea. Then they go the 3 day, you see how they apply it. That works. Then the 3 week. They get through that. Generally, they'll do all right. But we have the 3 month and 6 months after that, because kids can, if they really want to cut a profile, they can do it for 3 months. At least older ones. Younger ones, not so much. But they can't do it past 3 months. So then with the 6 months, then you actually see, is this actually them? So that's why all these levels are there, because you can see all these things. So it's just a matter, is there potential? What's to see? What's to work on? And so all those things then are there. Then you can say is that it works. Okay? So that then judges. Now, what is there? These are all things given by the scriptures, given by Srila Prabhupada. Right? Prabhupada gave us the Pancharatric lifestyle. Initially, he just gave the Bhagavat. Devotees just chant, go out on Hari Nam, right? They're out till 11 o'clock at night. They get up in the morning, chant their japa, you know, like this. They're supposed to do some reading, this, that, you know, take prasad, then go out on Hari Nam again. So they go out 12 hours a day, Hari Nam. Like that, straight. That was just what they did. But then, that went nicely until 1970 when Prabhupada figured out that no one was reading the books, no one knew the philosophy. So if someone came up with a bogus philosophy, except for Satsarup Maharaj, he was the only one that read a book because he was a school teacher before, right? And he was older than everyone else, so he wouldn't sit around in the ashram and gossip. So he read the books. And so then when people came up with bogus philosophy, he was the only one to defend. So then Prabhupada said, okay, we need a structure. So he gave the Pancharatric lifestyle. This is what we follow. And so Lord Chaitanya gave that structure to Sanatana Goswami. We can read it in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You get up in the morning. First thing you do, offer your obeisances to the spiritual master. Pick up the bed, clean the spot, right? Put it away. One, you have to clean it up. That creates discipline. But two, if you take the bed and put it away, then if you leave the bed there, you may be tired. You go back to sleep, right? But if it's rolled up and put away, you're too lazy to get it and bring it out again, so therefore you won't. There's more of a chance you'll stay away. It's the Pancharatric system. Then you go, you take your bath, the cleaning, you put on the clothes, the tilak, Gayatris, go to the temple, Mangal Arti. After that, there's puja. Then, after that, then you have the, you know, the darshan of the deities, you have the Bhagavatam study, because that way the Bhagavatam Gita, then devotees were getting in study, because otherwise they weren't, because they had scheduled it, then they heard something. Like nowadays, devotees know philosophy, but back then they didn't. They just knew Prabhupada's there, you chant Hare Krishna. So they knew technical, essential points, but beyond that they didn't know anything. But Prabhupada's explaining. Individuals, yes, they may have known. Because not everybody was spaced out like that. As I once said, I mentioned something about all being hippies. Then one of the older devotees from the 60s says, no, I wasn't a hippie. Not everybody was hippies. They made it very clear. You know, so Satsarup Maharaj, Bhavananda, Kirtananda, Umapati Maharaj, few of that, they weren't hippies. They were from the generation before, right? So they, you know. So then you have that lifestyle, then you have breakfast. After breakfast, then according to Pancharatra, you have your services. So generally in the temple, it'd be services in the temple, but if you're grihastha, you may have occupations and things outside, right? And then in the evening again, you take your bath, and there's the evening programs and things like that. You understand? That's the Pancharatric lifestyle. So that's the system that Prabhupada's given. Then he's given us the Krishna book. And there we see that what Krishna and Balaram learned. And if you see, it's the most complete. You can get more detail by like what Lord Chaitanya learned, of what Ramachandra learned, the techniques of how they were taught. So you get all these different things you can see. You put that together and then you have a schedule and a system that's based on the scriptures. Because the scriptures have, since the education is so important, they're not going to leave it up to chance. Because it's not about coming up with something new, it's about being able to apply what works. You understand? If you can't, let's just like cooking. It's not about coming up with new infusion. If you don't know cooking, you can't fusion anything except for what you cooked in the garbage can. Right? Like that. That's the only thing you can connect. Does that make sense? So it's because you know the science, then you can do things with it. But it's based on the science. Does that make sense? Those who can improvise in music, they know actually the music grammar the most. They've had the most practice by rote, just doing the same thing over and over and over again. Then they can improvise. But people who just try to start from the beginning and improvise, it doesn't work. You understand? So you have to have the science, then you can deal with the art. Like that. Yeah. So now, since it's about each individual learning and moving through all these different things according to their specific qualities, then the curriculum is divided up into various ways of teaching. You have new students, they come in, you learn in the standard way, you have a teacher, you have the class, you do that kind of thing, which basically if you've gone to any of the standard schools, government or private schools, they'll function in this way. And so that's because you have to have, you're not so much interested in studying or not so much, so you haven't learned how to study. So you go through this system. Once you come to the point where you can study, you like to study, then you move into the tutorial system. Which means now every child moves at their own pace in their own subjects. Does that make sense? So, and you have all these subjects, you have to finish all the subjects. Which ones you want to start with or end with, it doesn't matter. You're going to finish all these. So you like something, you'll do that. You'll be more enthusiastic. You'll develop more. You can learn more. You can study more. Then it'll be easier to do ones that you weren't as interested in. Does that make sense? Then it'll make it, so then when you finish that, then you can go into the specific studies or vocational studies, right? Probably call that Varnashram College, but it's just Gurukul. Sometimes I thought, well, Gurukul is one thing, Varnashram College is another. No, Varnashram College is an aspect of Gurukul. Because Prabhupada talked 5 to 25, so does Varnashram start after that? No, they're starting it down earlier. So it's part of. But it's all the same system, the same people. You're still there, you live in the school, there's still 5-year-olds there's still 30-year-olds there. And so that way then, because the ashram is the central point. And then where you're studying in it, which school you're studying in, right? So whether you're in the lecture style system, what's that called? You know, whatever. It's like that kind of that aspect. Or it's the tutorial. It doesn't matter. Or you're going on to the Varnashram aspects. It's all one experience, because it's all held together by the ashram. So then the students move through. And then if you're in the lecture, it's not by year. You go in and you start. It's by how much you know. And as you know more, you move up. Now if you finish that stuff, you move to the next level. You don't, you stay on it as long as you like. So if it takes you 2 years to learn it, it takes you 2 years. If it takes you 6 months, you're there for 6 months. So it's very individualized at how quickly they can learn at what subjects, and you'll find that some kids will know something more, something less. Like let's say you have a Chinese person or a Russian person coming to the school. Now, they're a little older. Now, as far as math goes, they're really good. But as far as English goes, not so good. So they'll be able to be in a lower class in English, but a higher class in math. And much of the time you see students, they have either more of a language brain or more of a math brain. And some are good at both, and some are not good at either. But so, Therefore, they'll move quicker in one and then the other. So we have all the classes at the same time. All the English class happens at the same time. That way you can be situated wherever you do. Then the next class period, then let's say you have math, it's wherever you go. So that way you could be in math 1, but in English 6. You understand? So this is how it individually learns. How quickly you move through it, when you move on to the tutorial, how quickly you move through that, when you move into the Varnashram, actually, how much you do. You just do one subject, you do many subjects. It's all up to you. Does that make sense? This is individualized. But because this is so sophisticated, then, and Vedic system is so simple. We're sitting here discussing technical points in education. There's a good chance you've never heard, even if you're an educator. And where are we having it? In a tin shed. Right? Now, if we were having this class on a university, where would we have to have it so that we all feel good and adult about ourselves? You know, one of those fancy, seminar rooms with all the seats there and all the little things and the blackboards and the projectors and the whole thing and at the angle and all the kind of jazz, right? Then we'd feel, now this is solid. But here we're just sitting on the floor in, this hut. You understand? That's the point. You look around. Well, where is the education, right? Because how do you know if you go into your grade school or high school, how do you know it's English classroom? Because there's English stuff plastered all over everywhere. You go into the math room, same thing. You go into the general, same thing. You go into the, science, same thing. Then you can say, oh, okay, yeah, it's happening. But you come here and it just goes, it's just a dirt floor. Where's the study? That's the problem. Even though it's the most sophisticated system, most advanced system, because it's so simple, because Prabhupada said, simple living, high thinking. We're not used to that. High living, high thinking, okay. But you can have high living, not high thinking, and that's fine, as long as it's high living. But simple living is for simple tongues. Right? For idiots. Right? But the Vedic system is, no, it's streamlined, it's simple, it's effective, it's not complicated. Does that make sense? You're like over there. You've seen over here, you have the different gargoyles that are there. You have the dragon that's there with the yaksha holding him up. That's a drain. It's an open drain. That means all the water runs down the little gully thing and out that and down, down to the next and then down to the next drain. And it's simple. Something gets stuck in there, you reach in your hand or use a broom, it's done. If it's a closed system, it gets stuck, you got a problem. Sometimes you even have to dig up the whole courtyard because the drain's stuck. This, you just sweep it out. But it's sophisticated. See, that's the problem. We think that simple means not sophisticated. Because in the West, then it's either simple or complicated. But in the Vedic, it can be simple, or simple and sophisticated. So the Vedic system has all that combined together. It's simple, but it's sophisticated. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then... Okay. Then, here we got from the Mahabharata, then it talks about, this is their Mahabharata, it's given in the Upanishads, that when you study, then you learn a quarter of what you learn from the teacher. A quarter of that is going to come from self-study. Right? And a quarter of that's going to come from association with others, and one quarter will just come from life experience. So whatever you learn, you get a quarter of that from the teacher. And then who you grow up with. So learning is an ongoing process. But the point is, the Vedic system, if you don't get that solid basis with the teacher, you can't take advantage of your own self-study, learning from that and experience, or for taking advantage of colleagues' experience also. Right? So that's all based on the culture and the character. So then you have what you're learning, then you have Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. So that means the three stages. That Shravana means you hear. Manana means you contemplate and apply. Right? Shravana that you hear, that all educational systems will talk about. Then they'll talk about application, but it's, you know, something in a little classroom or this or that. Not necessarily very serious. Right? Unless you're doing medicine or law, engineering, then they'll do more. But if you're doing other subjects, they won't then. So, but the contemplation of it, not many will do. It's if you do it, nice. If you don't do it, as long as you pass the grade, you're fine. But the Vedic is, there's no, you have to contemplate it, apply it. When you apply it, you see what went right, what didn't, then you contemplate again. Then, by doing that on a regular basis, that brings it into realization. Realization means it's a value now. Right? So if it hasn't been based on character, how it's going to become a value. Right? Because values means your character. At least it should be. You know, if your value is snorting cocaine, then, you know, of course, then there's a little weakness here in the character. Right? So the whole point is the quality of your character is the quality of your realization. So that's what education is for, is to bring you to the point of spiritual life, dedication to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, serving the Vaishnavas, as Indradunra was pointing out the other day. Lord Chaitanya gave basically two things. English is coming through. The taste for the holy name, Namaruchi, right? And the compassion to other living entities, Jiva Doya. And then he also mentions that there is Vaishnav Seva. Right? Does that make sense? So if you're doing this, you've understood human life. And so whatever knowledge, whatever character, whatever training you have to keep yourself busy in these things, that's what you do. But if at the end of the day it's not used in this, that's not your value. Your value is political correctness or bureaucracy or centralization or money or controlling money or controlling people, then you've missed the point basically completely. Like we said, you climb to the top of the mountain only to fall down the other side. That's the benefit you get. Right? So that has to be seen. And so then also, just as their study is not by specifically by age, you have general kind of things. Younger kids you'll generally see in here like this, but it doesn't. Then also graduation. So when someone's finished their education, they're able to apply, they're able to see how they're going to use this. They're satisfied, they don't, then that point they graduate. So some may be younger, some may be older. So basically, Prabhupada recommended, it means your adult age in the Vedic is 16, modern age is 18, so what are they going to do for 2 years? So then minimum would be 18, though some pull out earlier. Then you have, then up to 25, that is the next recommendation. But in the Vedic thing, you can go to 32. So you see a few go to there. A few more go to the other, like this, they go through. So that's the idea. So it's whenever they individually go through the system, they individually graduate. So you don't have this fixed system because it is about the individual. But there are standards by which it's not that the individual establishes the thing. No, the individual chooses from the standard recommended activities. Because remember, we said the Vedic system is, you start with Shruti, the authority of Shruti, then the authority of Smriti is the second, or tradition, then the authority of the Acharyas and great Vaishnavas, then the fourth is our own taste, our own interest. So we choose ourselves from the group given by the first three. That's individual. But the modern is, no, it starts with the individual. They'll never get to the other three, don't worry. Does that make sense? Okay. Wow. Any question?
Can you explain this last point?
Shruti, Smriti, and... means you have the first point of authority is Shruti. Means the Veda. Means everything has to go back to the authority of the Veda. Then you have Smriti, which is the discussions of the great saints and sages that is then documented what we call Smriti. Right, so all the Puranas, like Puranas, the discussion between Sutta Goswami and the sages at Naimisharanya, all the 18 Puranas. Right, so that's Smriti. Bhagavad Gita, like this, that's all Smriti. The works of the Acharyas, like this. Then you have the third thing is then how is these scriptures then interpreted and understood and practiced by the great personalities, the acharyas, you know, the great personalities like that. Does that make sense? Then the fourth thing is ourselves. So from all that, then we choose how we want to be situated. Does that make sense? So the Vedic system has standards, and it's about the individual. Well, the modern will have standards, no individuality, or individuality, no standards. That's why the Vedic system isn't really understood by anybody. Because the Vedic system is both. So the combination makes it so nice and balanced that you can't really tell. You just think, you walk through the school, you just think that this is not like a retreat or a park or something. If no one told you, you'd never know that this is an educational institution. That's the point. You can use it for anything. This is designed for martial arts. Kids can play in here. We can have classes here. So we can do anything in here. Right? But if you have a classroom in the modern school, it can only be used for class. You can't do anything else in there. Right? The chairs are fixed. You can't move them. I mean, you can walk on the back of them if you're good balance, but otherwise not. I have seen that, though. During a kirtan, and this one devotee, he could dance around on the backs of the chairs, you know, in the seminary, you know, like that, and dance around on that. I haven't seen anyone else do that. Yes? Sorry? It means the general just means the nature of a jiva. Jiva is 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. They're the tatastha shakti of Krishna. Like that. That's general knowledge. Then, of those, there are those who are conditioned and there are those who are liberated. That's the meaning of three kinds of jivas. Yes? You have to speak loudly.
One question is, I'm afraid I came a little late. I'm asking. Prahlad Maharaj in 7th canto is teaching schoolmen who are around 5 years old.
Yes.
That time he explains about a lot of things to them, and at the end he tells how you engage in Bhagavad Vidhi only.
Right.
Ravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam,
yes,
Guru,
yes.
Guru Bhakti.
Yes.
Is the essence. You know?
Right.
And all other things he speaks quite technical. So, that is the thing about Bhagavad Gita. And what I understood from you is how rituals are very important to be for the children.
Yes. No, but it's not that he's not saying it's there. What's the purpose of a ritual? If you learn the ritual but don't learn how to use it for Krishna, is it actually a benefit to you?
Yes.
Yes or no? No, but we're answering your question. Yes or no?
Ritual?
If you know the ritual very nicely, but you don't know how to connect it to Krishna, does it really have any value? That's Prahlad Maharaj's point. He doesn't say don't learn rituals. His point is that the rituals are learned only for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. Therefore, you're learning the ritual, but the most important thing you're learning is how it connects to the Lord.
My question is that why is it only Bhagavad Vidhi is enough?
We didn't just answer your question. Did anybody else get it?
Yes, Maharaj.
No. The point is Bhagavad Vidhi is enough. But the point is we have a conditioning. One. And two, you have to express that Bhagavad Vidhi. How are you going to do that? Right? Haridas Thakur, now he's living a lifestyle of purely Bhagavad Vidhi. Are you going to do that? No, therefore you require the Pancharatrik, right? Because that's what Krishna says in the Gita. Best option is surrender to him, right? On the spot. Gopis did it, the yogic wives of the Brahmins did it, Maharaj Katvanga did it, so it's possible, right? If you can't do that, then you follow the rules and regulations of the Pancharatrik. Right? And if you can't do that, then you just be a nice guy, you know, as you know, more of a guy. Do things of your attachment, but connected to the rules. And if you can't do that, then just be a nice guy, open hospitals, giving charity, and all that kind of jazz. Right? So, the whole point is that since we're not working on the pure Bhagavad Vidhi, then for us it's supported by the Pancharatrik. So Prabhupada gives the example, it's like two rails of a train. Right? They both go together, and that way we're supported. Bhagavat's enough, but the problem is us being conditioned, we can't only use Bhagavat. We have to use the Pancharatra. That's if we're just engaged in just the temple worship and that, like the devotees were in the earlier days. But, as you add in the Grihastha ashram, then you have to bring in details from the Vedic. Otherwise, then the details aren't given in Pancharatra, other than you get up, take your bath, and go to the temple. But what you do at other times of the day and your occupation, that the Vedic will explain. You understand? So, according to your condition, that much you are trained in. Somebody said? Yeah? Okay. Bell has rung.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.
Just a brief announcement. As I mentioned before, I have a list here of activities for performing on the last day of this symposium. So those who are interested can come here and just... This is just for us to have some idea of your interest and how many devotees so we can facilitate.
German?
Okay.
Which part? Frankfurt.
Okay.
Did you pull this one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Somebody gave it to you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just I think maybe work it out with Bali.
Yeah. We'll have to try to see when to work it in because it's kind of. Liturgy just means, I think, the ritual. Cult is Sanskrit, and I think English is liturgy. It's a science, a study of rituals.
Don't worry, we have a place for
Kalpa means here, it means the performance of the yagyas and those technical rituals.
Reporting.
Like that, because that's the Vedic is the kalpa, and taking from there that's specifically only about Vishnu, that's Pancharatra.
They'll
be in that third category. Yeah, their position is in line with the founder of Acharya, who's giving us the essence of
what we'll try as much as possible. Okay. We're gonna have 3 hours on the last day. We're all gonna do that. So I think it's enough time.
You Shravanam, you did Munanam,
you
did Dasam.
And tomorrow,
this education, in children also it varies, or in child?
Yeah, of course.
Because different people, some people can contemplate, some cannot contemplate.
Yes, that's very individual. All those people, they were children at one point. So depending upon them, they can or cannot contemplate. But the point is you have to make them aware of what they're doing. If they're not aware of what they're doing, then they won't concentrate.
One has to start doing that eventually.
Yes, but the earlier you do, the easier it is.
It's easier it is.
Earlier. Yeah, because if you're already practicing, it's just like if you learn to ride a bicycle at 5, it's easier.
It's easier.
Older. If you try to learn to ride a bicycle when you're older, it's more difficult. Don't think it's, they're an adult, they'll learn quicker. No, a kid. Because the kid will get on it and fall off and get back on and fall off, while the adult will get on, fall off, and then not do it anymore. Yeah.
This is Narsingh Dev Mahaprasad.
Narsingh Dev.
Tomorrow,
in case we come tomorrow, should I remove and give us this?
Okay, you could do that.
What if you are happy with it?
Yesterday you were telling that boys learn very slowly. For many, many years.
Yes, yesterday morning.
Good year.
Yeah, I see.
Many, many years we have to do it.
These cultural things. Okay. Academics, they may learn as quickly or not as girls. The point is, girls like to do something, they focus on it. So that kind of self-centeredness works for them, because then what they want to know, they learn very easily. For the boys, you know, all they want to do is play.
About 3 seconds, 3 minutes, 3 weeks.
Yes.
So, just wanted to know, how does a guru identify the varna of a particular boy?
How you see what they do, how they work, how they respond, how you have to deal with them. Like that. First of all, in school, you just go by what they're interested in and what they can do. Like that. But varna is after graduation and then what work they go into. So what they do in the school may be one thing, but what they do after they graduate, that's then why you define their varna. So in the school, you just see what is their nature and what they're doing at the time and train them in that. It doesn't matter that later it may be something else, because that's what they're interested in. And then how they actually apply themselves, then you'll see that later.
In the current environment, like sometimes it may not be possible for like his varna activities to be giving that much of money.
But what's the, what does that mean? It means what would be the example of this?
Like somebody is a Brahminical person.
Yeah, but does the Brahmin need much money?
But his family needs family.
But what does the family need? But they're Brahmins, how much do they need? So in other words, you have a combination, right? They're choosing these occupations because they make money. Is that a Brahmin? Yeah, so then where's the contradiction? An actual Brahmin doesn't need much money.
Real Brahmin focus on the Brahmin activities.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. We make it complicated.